we talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took 5 loaves and 2 fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues, etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
The modern left has grown tired of debate. Their new strategy is simply to try to silence their critics.
When the local evangelical pastor gets up and ends his prayer with a reference to Jesus' sacrificial death on the cross, that moment in the parade of pluralism is offensive.
Sin essentially is high treason against the king, against the sovereign.
Your sins are forgiven. Though you're a rotten, damned sinner of the law, Jesus came for such sinners. Jesus loves sinners. Jesus comes only for sinners. Jesus dwells in sinners. Jesus is for you. You're forgiven.
I'm Daniel Berquist. I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm a Macintosh software engineer. And I love Issues Etc.
It seems like a pretty big story, and really a concerning story from the New York Times. Cleric convicted of all terrorism charges. Turns out that Mostafa Kamel Mostafa, a former imam at the Finsbury Park Mosque in North London, right there in the heart of Great Britain's capital, had helped orchestrate the violent 1998 kidnappings of 16 American, British, and Australian tourists in Yemen, and all sorts of other things he was apparently running from that mosque. Now, that story of a terrorist convicted is good news for those who wish to see terrorism curtailed, but it's just the tip of the iceberg. And, of course, stories of terrorism continue, and some of them continue without resolution, like a conviction, namely the story of Boko Haram, the kidnapping of hundreds of schoolgirls in Nigeria, and putting them up for sale. Joining us to talk about both of these stories in the second hour of Issues, Etc., Robert Spencer, and a little bit later, we'll talk with Pastor Tom Baker, teaching a Sunday school lesson, Peter's miraculous escape from prison in Acts chapter 12. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. We are coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio here in Collinsville, Illinois, on this Tuesday afternoon, the 20th of May. Feel free to join us with a question or comment, either for Robert Spencer or for Pastor Baker a little bit later, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Robert Spencer is a regular guest. He's director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including his latest, Arab Winter Comes to America, The Truth About the War We're In. Robert, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here, Todd. Thank you.
Let's begin with an update on the Boko Haram story. A lot of protests, a lot of celebrities chiming in on Twitter and other social media about this situation, but has the story itself changed at all?
No, not at all. Boko Haram essentially can act with impunity in Nigeria. The Nigerian government has been powerless to stop them. People are very upset about this kidnapping of the schoolgirls, but in reality, Boko Haram has been, for years now, committing acts of violence, terrorizing Christians, burning down churches in Nigeria. They have been responsible also for the murders of 2,500 people in Nigeria in the first 3 months of 2014 alone.
Okay, so the girls are still in their custody?
Yes. Yes, they're still there. And they have been, according to Boko Haram, they have been sold off, auctioned off to various members of the group to be used as sex slaves in accord with the Quran's allowance of that practice for captive infidel women.
Why is the Nigerian government either inactive or unable to do anything about this?
Well, they have announced many times that they have them on the run and that the situation is under control and that Boko Haram will be gone soon. And then they always seem to come back. The Nigerian government in the first place is weak, corrupt, and inefficient. And otherwise, it also, Boko Haram has sympathizers within that government. And that makes it doubly hard when you've got people who think that you're doing a great thing to coordinate efforts to stop you.
So one more question on that. When we heard out of the Vatican today, I think it was an African bishop saying, look, the protests are well-intentioned, but Boko Haram doesn't care. They don't respond to this kind of thing. Is he telling the truth?
That's absolutely true. Yes, no doubt about that. Boko Haram couldn't care less about Michelle Obama's hashtag or international opprobrium. They know that the international community is not going to do anything. And it's true. You know, the hashtag is just sort of a symbol of the impotence of the West in the face of this kind of organization, that they'll talk big but not really do anything.
I do want your reaction to one story that was circulating over the weekend, and that was people saying, well, should we really associate Boko Haram with Islam?
Well, you know, I always find this kind of thing very strange, because Boko Haram associates itself with Islam. And so we are not to report honestly on what they say and do. They explain that what they are doing is in accord with Islam. As a matter of fact, their name is not really Boko Haram at all. Boko Haram means Western education is sin, but in reality, the official name of the group, that's a sort of a nickname. The official name of the group is the Party of the People of the Sunnah for Dawah and Jihad. Sunnah is accepted Islamic practice, and Dawah is Islamic proselytizing. So it's an explicitly Islamic group. Its actions of kidnapping these girls, it's completely in accord with the Quran in chapter 4, verse 3, chapter 4, verse 24, about the captives of the right hand who are essentially sex slaves. This is something that is taught by mainstream Islamic authority as being acceptable. And so what I find very strange, Todd, is that I've examined quite a few of the many articles that have been published in the mainstream media lately explaining how the actions of Boko Haram are un-Islamic. None of them touch on those verses. None of them talk about the treatment of captive infidel women in Islamic law. And yet that's the key to understanding what Boko Haram is doing in this case.
Turning to the other story that I'd like your input on, who is Mostafa Kemal Mostafa? Who has he been and what's he been up to?
Well, he's much better known as Abu Hamza al-Masri. And as under that name, Abu Hamza, he was the imam of the Finsbury Park Mosque in London, from which he directed terrorist activities in London and around the world. He was extradited a few years back to the United States, finally stood trial, and was actually just found guilty of various terrorist offenses, mostly centering around his attempt to start an Al-Qaeda training camp on a ranch in Bly, Oregon.
So this isn't just a story out of Great Britain. This is a story that has U.S. connections, too.
Very much so, yes. It was about 10, 12 years ago, and Abu Hamza was actively working with James Ujamaa, who was an American convert to Islam, to set up this jihad terror training camp in Oregon.
Now, he denies this on the stand, that he had anything to do with that, and that's the thing that kind of caught my attention. Why, if he is the ardent loyalist to jihad, why would he deny it? Why wouldn't he simply say, yeah, and I did it under your noses all these years, and I'm here for the survival of Islam?
As Muhammad said in a very famous hadith, war is deceit, and to deceive the infidels in wartime and to confuse them so that they don't really know what the Muslims are up to or why is a war objective. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that he would deny it, because he doesn't want people thinking that this kind of thing is even being done. He would rather that we be ignorant and complacent about it.
So if someone had happened into his mosque there in North London while he was there presiding as imam, what would they have heard him say in the course of a mosque service?
Well, one thing that he said, actually, with an interesting connection to Boko Haram, was that the infidels were like cattle, and that if they were in a Muslim land, they could be caught and enslaved and sold just as if they were a cow. And he has called for jihad warfare against non-Muslim states, against non-Muslim people, on many occasions. And whenever he says this kind of thing, of course, he justifies it all by quoting the Quran and referring to Quranic and Islamic teaching.
So why was he able to do this for all these years right there in one of the primary capitals of the Western world?
Well, the British authorities are not really keen on prosecuting people like this because they know, I think, even despite their official denials, that this man does not represent a twisting and hijacking of Islam, but is working from core Islamic teaching. And such, as such, they risk offending the so-called moderate Muslim community by prosecuting him. He is a Muslim cleric. He teaches from the Quran. Everything he says is based on the Quran. And so it's a certain sense it's putting Islam on trial. And the British authorities wish to avoid that. And so he was able to operate with impunity for years because of this politically correct delicacy.
Has this uncovered, or at least further uncovered, the possibility that mosques in the Western world could be centers not only for planning but for executing terrorism?
Well, I think if we lived in a sane environment, then yes, but I don't think that it will be will lead to that conclusion on anyone's part, because the same politically correct stranglehold is still on around us.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that it's still, for example, official FBI policy in the United States to not study anything in relation to Islam in connection with terrorism. And so, in other words, FBI agents are officially forbidden to understand the motives and goals of those who are about to destroy us, which is a spectacularly self-defeating policy.
In your mind, is it possible that there is a counterpart to someone like Mustafa Kemal Mustafa, an imam in an American mosque someplace, carrying out or planning to carry out similar kind of activities?
Yeah, the thing is, we wouldn't have any way of knowing, because it's so politically incorrect to go into mosques. You know, there was surveillance of mosques and surveillance of Muslim communities being conducted by the New York Police Department, and the new mayor de Blasio just ended that program under Muslim pressure, under the contention that it was Islamophobic. And so it's just not the right political environment to discuss such questions right now.
So are you saying that, I mean, we're talking here now about homegrown terrorism, still Islamic terrorism, but homegrown terrorism, not someone hijacking a plane in France, or not someone hijacking a plane or planning to do some other kind of activity elsewhere and bringing it here, importing it here, but it grows up out of our own soil.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. That's exactly the situation. But the thing is that we're bound as an official policy to believe that Islam is a religion of peace, and the only people who think otherwise are people who have twisted and hijacked the peaceful religion. And the vast majority of the Muslims who go to the American mosques have not twisted and hijacked the peaceful religion, and so we have nothing to worry about. Now, there are many problems with this. One of the main ones is that even Muslim groups that are supposed to be moderate, like the Council on American Islamic Relations most notably, have on many occasions advised their members not to cooperate with the FBI, not to deal properly with law enforcement authorities. And the mosques, there's no program in any American mosque to teach against the understanding of Islam represented by Osama bin Laden and people like Abu Hamza. No mosque anywhere in the country has a program designed to keep young Muslims from getting the idea that that is the proper view of Islam. And so we assume these groups are all moderate. We assume that everybody in them is sterling and loyal and so on. And yet nothing is really being done to stop the growth of such an ideology.
What would be a good solution for this? What would be a good change in policy that, without going on any kind of witch hunt, where we could actually have a knowledge of what may be happening in American mosques?
Well, I think that the mosques do need to be surveilled, and that's not against the First Amendment or against the violation of anyone's rights, but there's ample proof from around the world that mosques have been and are being used as centers for jihad terror activity. And so to keep them under surveillance, to know what's being preached in them, it doesn't seem to me to be an unreasonable thing at all. And certainly to call upon Muslim organizations in the United States to institute just those kinds of programs that I just mentioned, and programs that would call upon mosques to institute programs that we would call upon the mosques to institute, that they would be teaching against this understanding of Islam. They claim to reject it, and so they shouldn't have any problem teaching against it.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch. He's author of several books on Islam, including his latest, Arab Winter Comes to America, The Truth About the War We're In. You'll find information about this book and a link to Jihad Watch under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Robert, thank you for your time.
Pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker, as we do every week. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson. We'll be in Acts chapter 12. It's Peter's amazing escape from prison. You can hardly call it an escape. He's led out by the hand, by an angel. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel, next on Issues, Etc.
Every week, Ravenelli's Restaurant and Carryout cooks up 29,000 pieces of chicken, 980 gallons of meat sauce, 310 loaves of fresh bread, and 200 fresh pies and cakes. Ravenelli's Restaurant and Carryout in Granite City, Collinsville, and O'Fallon, Illinois. Ravenelli's.com. Ravanellis.com. Ravenelli's Restaurant and Carryout.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Christianity has so much influence our culture that we take it for granted and think it was always that way.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you move into one of the Mideastern countries where primarily the theology of Islam operates, you can see the influence of what Christianity has had in our culture. Yet, we tend not really quite to, how shall I say, realize it and appreciate it. And once in a while, we need to be reminded.
You can meet and hear Dr. Alvin Schmidt making the case for Christianity's positive impact on civilization June 13th and 14th at the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.